I'm going to go ahead and bring in former Vice News Tonight correspondent, which I also was, and also a senior producer at Vice and a current editor, is this correct, at Columbia Journalism Review, Josh Hirsch. What's up, man?
That's right. That's right. How you doing, Dex? I hate the idea that I'm squeezing you for time because I'm so honored to have the chance to be on this show, which I have watched you make for some time now, craving the opportunity to get on it. So I'm thrilled to have this chance now. It's a privilege.
Nah, man. So we are here to talk about sports journalism. And I feel like we talk about journalism, capital J, journalism, a decent amount on this stream. Well, I do. I do. This isn't your fault. But we're here to talk about sports journalism. And let's start this off by talking about what your piece is about. So you went, I'm going to bring it up in a second, but you went to the taping of like a baseball live stream podcast, kind of hybrid YouTube channel, right? Tell me about that. What is this?
I mean, it's funny because like I'm so conscious as I start this and as I wrote that piece too, I'm so conscious of like talking about journalism in a way that both values what's important about journalism, what we have to kind of protect, while also not being so boring and tedious as to not recognize that like sometimes the problem with journalism is that it's not that fun and it's not that interesting. And you know, if we live in a fantasy world where people should just watch things or read things because they're important, we get ourselves in a lot of trouble. So that brings me to this piece, which is I got really interested in, just as a sports fan in general, I got really interested in this boom that is happening right now of digital shows, podcasts, documentaries, especially produced by hosted by featuring athletes themselves.
Yeah.
And to me, I thought a couple things. The first was these things are really cool. You know, like they're really fun. I enjoy them. I love watching like quarterback. I was a fan of Hard Knocks from the old days. Like I love watching quarterback, you know, the new Peyton Manning executive produced show on Netflix. I had stumbled upon this podcast about baseball. There are not a ton of these things about baseball called Foul Territory, which is the show I ended up going to watch. It had a couple former ball players.
Yeah.
You know, a great host from the MLB network who's left, who's now the host of the show. I happen to be an Orioles fan, and there's a lot of ex-Orioles on this show for some reason, so
bless
it really
you.
Speaks to me. Yeah, I mean, what can you do? You know, it's a good time to be an Orioles fan. It hasn't been for a long time. We're enjoying this.
Even I know that,
But the thing that kind of nagged at me as I sort of exploring this and what made me think it might be an interesting story for CJR, where I'm working now, is over the last year in particular, you have seen it's been pretty much a devastating year for actual sports journalism in the sort of hard news, independent, especially on TV sense. But frankly, Sports Illustrated, I mean, we all know what happened with Sports Illustrated.
Well, no, not everybody knows what happened to Sports Illustrated.
Basically became kind of a click farm. I mean, I don't even know if I can follow the whole saga. Partly I was just trying to get out of trying to give the whole details of it, because the truth is that it went back and forth, but it's all but shut down now. I mean, a magazine that for any kid who grew up a sports fan, you read and coveted and had the football phone or whatever you got for subscribing. And now it's pretty much a defunct organization.
The football phone.
That's what I remember. Am I dating myself? Oh,
no, that's amazing. The football phone.
So Sports Illustrated, Deadspin is pretty much gone, as with most of the kind of Gizmodo Media or whatever that kind of company is sort of devolved into. New York Times got rid of its sports section, replaced it with The Athletic, but you know, it got rid of an in-house, very powerful, very creative sports section. And then on video, ESPN shut down Outside the Lines. It still exists, but it's not a standalone show.
Right.
And the real painful one is Real Sports on HBO.
Real Sports,
29 years and is over now.
29 years.
Oh yeah, man, it was an incredible show. It won every award, and frankly, you know, part of the thing that's great about Real Sports is that like it really elevated sports as a thing that isn't just, you know, oh, it's kind of fun and we all enjoy it, because of course that's true. It found these storylines that needed to be exposed, that needed to be told.
Yeah.
And did it in a visually appealing, interesting way. And the sad thing is, I don't know what's left. It doesn't say there's nothing. The Washington Post has a good sports section. They just did a big piece on LSU's, the women basketball coach, that got a lot of attention. But the unfortunate reality is, and it's somewhat connected to what's happening across media, but it's really acute in sports.
Yeah.
This stuff just does not exist anymore.
So let's look at what let's look at the alternative is, right? Because I want to talk about this, right? So this I pulled up the page or the YouTube page that you're talking about. So foul territory, right? This is it. I want to make note of one thing right here. So this is they have a live component, which is similar to what I'm doing right now, right? And it says baseball the way it should be covered. I love that. Baseball the way it should be covered, right? Which, and so this is some players, right? So these people don't have, go ahead.
One of the guys, the top corner, is Scott Braun. He's a very talented host who came from MLB Network, and he's now kind of the brains, if you will, behind this operation. I mean, he kind of runs he's the Dexter of that show. And then you've got a rotating cast of former players, Eric Kratz, AJ Pierzynski, who was a real character when he played. He was a catcher who was once voted by his peers the least liked player in baseball. He's very charming, like he's very likable, you know, but it's just like he played the game hard. Todd Frazier, whose house I was at for the taping, because they all tape out of their house for the most part. Todd played for the Reds, and he played for the Mets and briefly the Yankees, a bunch of teams, but he was a phenomenal baseball player, you know. And like, what's fun about this, covered is I think such a delicate word that like I wrestle with how they think of it too. What's fun about this is these guys, they know the game, you know, and they actually have opinions, you know, like they're not sitting there. Scott came from MLB Network, where he really felt like for many years he couldn't say what he thought about the league because he worked for the league.
Right.
On this show, they are, I mean, particularly tough about owners. You know, they're tough. Like there's a team, the Oakland Athletics, who's kind of screwing over their fan base. They're planning to move to Las Vegas. There's a real tension there, and they hold nothing back in what they say about owners who won't spend. The issue, and we can get into this if you like, but where it stops being the thing that I think we still need a lot of is, you know, they have lines, you know, they have lines about kind of what's reasonable discourse, what's appropriate questions to be asking. You know, part of what makes the show good is that they're athletes who ask questions the way athletes want questions asked, so they get interesting answers. But they also don't ask questions that athletes don't want asked. And sometimes you have to do that in journalism.
So you really get into it. So I want to pull back a little bit. I want to give people a little bit of a sense for what this show is like. So again, this is foul territory. We're looking at their YouTube page, and look, the things that I'm going to say next are going to sound disrespectful. I do not mean them in a disrespectful way. Okay. I want to look real quick at, and you mentioned this in your article, right? That you say something to the effect of they have modest live stream numbers. Okay. I'm looking at these numbers, you know, 5,000, you know, on the live stream, 5,000 plays. That's, it's not bad. I would love to have those numbers. That is not MLB numbers. Those are like,
I don't know how sustainable that is, you know, like, and we, you know, they're new. They just hit the 1 year mark.
Exactly. Yeah.
I don't know how to really, like, they felt, I asked them about this, you know, I talked to Scott about the numbers and the financing. I think they got, you know, a decent runway to see what they can build, you know, the thing that they're competing against, though, and the reason why this isn't just like, you know, any market overexpands at times, but like you've got Pat McAfee's show, which was so big that ESPN paid tens of millions of dollars to basically license it and bring
to
it on the air.
And now it's
just on air. You know, now it's just like 2 hours of ESPN's programming is Pat McAfee's podcast, essentially.
Let's look at it, man. Let's look at it, because I want to show people this, because I think there's something worth talking about here. So we're just going to pull up one of the most recent things,
although it is where they live stream. But if you like on TikTok, on Twitter sometimes, or X, their clips when they chop them up have done like millions of views at times, you know. And I think that's a feature of these things, that, you know, they had a story go viral last year about a player who had to poop so badly that he just decided he was going to swing at the first pitch and either, you know, get himself out or get a home run. And he hit a home run, and it was kind of an amazing story. And truly the kind of thing that, like, probably he would not have told that in any other context. Like, that's what's cool about these things, you know? Anyway, sorry, I just throw them a bone here, because I think, like, I respect the hustle. They work hard, you know? It's really very cool.
Because that's what I'm about to say. I mean, I'm going to mute it here, but, like, look at this. I want you to look at this show, and the Pat McAfee show looks very similar to this. For those of you who don't know, Pat McAfee, you know, NFL former punter, right? Who, again, Pat McAfee show, I think the similar thing about this, I mean, look at this. I mean this with all actual due respect. This is not a well-produced visually show. There are not high production values. I think my camera is better than this dude's camera. And I'm not hating at all. I'm saying that, like, the fact of the matter is, I think we've become really used to, you know, HBO style, like, real sports. You know, that thing was so well produced that, like, fancy cameras, you know, tons of camera people, you know, the sound, you got makeup people, you got all these other things. It turns out, actually, you don't need fancy cameras. You don't need fancy makeup person. You don't need a bunch of microphones. You can do this damn near. I mean, this looks like a Zoom call. My man FaceTiming in. I'm not hating. There is something to be appreciated about this, which say, look, it's people sitting around having a conversation. I mean, look at this set. It's not well lit. It's just fine. The thing that matters is the content of the conversation. That's what people care about. And that's why people like this stuff. It turns out, actually, the meta, you know, what people care about isn't necessarily just the, you know, the production values. That's all right. Mm-hmm. It's, hey, I like hearing these guys talk or yell, as the case may be. It's often yelling. I think
like a lot of things, like, we credit the pandemic with that. It changed the general public sensibility. We're used to Zoom and these kind of things more. And so we don't recoil. Like, you and I were at Vice for a long time together. There was an intensive effort, even when we first went remote, as you probably recall, to give us all high quality cameras and spend quite a lot of money to generate a sense of, like, studio at home. Mm-hmm. And I think what the real lesson of that time has been is that, like, audiences are more interested in the authenticity. What a horrible word. I regret that I even said it. But ultimately, they're interested in a sense of, like, this is just like people on a Zoom call. And that's what's so great about these shows, is it's former athletes sitting around. Like, if you care about baseball, you can sit and watch the show for an hour or two. And it's just like former athletes, some of whom are real characters, being pretty candid about the stuff that's taking place on the field in a way that is less clipped and less self-aware than you would certainly get at MLB Network, but also at SportsCenter on ESPN. It's a lot of fun, you know. And I you know, like, anytime you write an article, like, you and I have been in print and in video, so, like, video is in some ways easier to let people breathe and be their own selves and, like, let them be fun. So much of it is funneled through your own words in print. I mean, all of it is. So I fret about, like, you know, did I quite capture, like, the joy of this show as a viewer, you know, because, like, it is great, great fun. And I think, like, the challenge on some level for journalism, capital J, is to figure out how to be fun like this and how to feel worth watching and interesting and engaging to people, not to just, like, shit all over this stuff, to be frank.
So let's do it. Yeah. So we just talked about the positives.
We have
let's
to worry.
Talk about it. We
have to worry a little bit, because it's close to gone, the stuff that we really do need too, the vegetables, unfortunately.
So let's talk about that, man, because I think this is the thing, because I set all that up and I said all those things that sounded like a backhanded compliment, and I truly don't mean them like that. I truly do mean, I think the fact that the production values on that thing are not super high, that they're not blowing money on things that don't really matter, is encouraging. I think that should show people, look, yo, if they can do it, maybe I could make, you know, hey, do something with get your Android phone out, man. You need an iPhone. Like, do your thing, man. Record something. That's amazing. I think we should be focused on the content of the conversations more than just these production values. Okay, so now saying all those nice things, let's get to the other side of it, which is that one of the things your article really gets into is the fact that journalism, and I want to gatekeep here, but we're going to a little bit, journalism is being replaced by like friendly conversations between people who have an interest in maintaining a lot of times a status quo.
Yeah.
Am I mischaracterizing your idea there?
I think that's a perfect way to phrase it. It's like one of the issues.
Right.
I wish I had a better way to kind of like articulate. Maybe I need to go to business school to write a more sophisticated version of this.
The elevator
like articulate
pitch.
The exact. Yeah. No, but like the exact mechanism here, because I don't know if I have my finger on it. Mm. But in a world where audiences and executives in particular are really at close to capacity in terms of how much sports content they're willing to put on HBO, on Netflix, on Amazon, on Disney, on Apple, all of whom have these similar kinds of things. They have partnerships with leagues or with athletes to produce a substantial volume of content. And I'm sure they have internal clocks about how much time and money they want to devote to this stuff. Mm-hmm. Audiences, individuals certainly have a sort of internal sense of how much you want to spend watching or reading or listening to these things.
Right.
It leaves very, very little room for the unpleasant stuff. And you know, if you are Netflix, who has a really successful multi-season show with Formula One right now that mm-hmm. everyone loves, they have a show with the PGA that everyone loves. They're talking about deals with the NFL, maybe to do live games. These are all things that are like huge money right now.
Yeah.
Why do you want to jeopardize that by allowing on a show, a variety show like a Real Sports, that at any given week could write a really, really negative piece about the league that you are in partnership with? That's a huge, huge problem.
It's and a liability. So why would you want
it's
that?
It's a huge liability. No one wants it. No one wants it. And so
yeah.
You have that problem. You have, I think, audiences have a limit to how much content they're getting. Like I've been thinking about this a little bit as an allegory, and it's not a perfect one, or analogy. It's not a perfect one. But take the military, for example. You know, the military is, like sports in a way, a kind of insular, selective group of people operating at an elite level. We tend to valorize them. They gatekeep with language and coded terminology. You have to kind of understand to be on the inside. And there's a real volume right now of like video shows and podcasts by ex-military people telling stories that are often super cool, super fun. I've enjoyed watching them. You know, I find it fascinating. But like, I think we all understand that as a society, you need a substantial dose of somebody out there taking a critical eye at the military, whether it's
right.
The spending practices, the tactics, the decision making at the Pentagon. Like we know we need that. In sports, I feel like we're looking away a little. We're not quite noticing that, like, maybe people think it's there, but it's really mm-hmm. not anymore. This kind of stuff has dissipated. And as I think I pointed out through Josh Fine, who was a producer, a very smart guy who was at Real Sports for a while, he talks about talked to me a lot about this, you know, like maybe some of this didn't make the piece, but we talked about some of the stuff like teams are massive recipients of public funding. We like incredible subsidies that go to teams, right? Very little oversight about that. Very little investigations into how that money actually gets spent, how valuable it is. So that's a huge thing. There are scandals all the time in sports that need to be looked at critically. And I don't doubt, by the way, like if a scandal breaks in baseball, I'm sure that the people at Foul Territory will talk about it. My question is, are they going to be devoting the mind space and resources right now to mm-hmm. dig up stuff that you and I don't even know is out there and produce it for the world to see? That's what worries me. I don't think that that's the way that this show operates. And I don't know who's doing it right now.
Yeah, I mean, look, I have a perfect example of that, which I think will dovetail very well with something that you were talking about earlier. I'm going to pull up them talking about, you know, talking about scandals. They definitely talk about scandals. Like, don't get me wrong. They do. Let me find this video here. Oh man, I'm not seeing this. They got one with Ohtani, right? Obviously.
I'm sure they talked about I know they talked about it.
Yeah. They have to. They have to talk about Ohtani and the Dodgers, right?
And they're not scared to. I mean, I respect to them. Of course they're going to talk about this stuff.
Of course. Yeah, definitely. And then but I think it's worth taking a look at the little bottom left corner there. So talking about betting in general, which is this is something that you bring up a little bit. You bring this up a little bit, and I want to also reference also former graduate or fellow graduate mm-hmm. Jay Kang, his article, which mm-hmm. y'all's two articles came out the same day, back to back. I think his came out the day after. I mean, but it's perfect. He mentions one thing. Yeah. Talking about betting, right? Sports betting. So he, as he writes in here, he doesn't think gambling needs to be illegal. He thinks it should be legal, but he's starting to say, you know what? This is, gambling is changing the character of sports. So what he brings up is the single prop bet, which basically is it's a game. It's something you can bet on. Single game parlays. I'm sorry. Single game parlays, SGPs. Which you can talk, it's like minor small things which a particular player may have control over. So first off, it's more profitable. As it says here in this article that he wrote in the New Yorker, a typical bet on whether a team will cover a spread will deliver a 5-6% return for a casino. But a single game parlay, by comparison, will return up to 30%. So for example, as a player, you can't fix a baseball game. You can't fix a basketball game, but you can fix your own performance. You could grab an extra rebound away from your teammate. You could miss a ball. You could kick a ball out of bounds. And even
how many first pitches will a batter take or something? There's so many prop bets now, and a lot of them are both, I think, like easily controllable by individual players and also relatively inconsequential to the outcome of the game. And so,
there's a huge door. Just bunt. Just bunt, you know, hey, maybe just bunt on that. Or you know what? Maybe drop one pitch and make a whole bunch of money for somebody, maybe including yourself, maybe a tie to somebody else. And maybe maybe you're in a minor league. Maybe people bet on you and you think, hey, this is my one chance to get a pretty good check. And if I get, X'd out the league, it was worth it. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I should say, like I asked Scott about this because they're sponsored by BetMGM and he was very clear that, there's nothing holding them back from talking about anything. He feels no restrictions from sponsorship. But so I don't want to like contradict that because I don't know. Like, I don't know what he's going to do or not do as the story unfolds and as day goes on. But the question is always like, how far are you going to push it? How deep are you mm-hmm. going to take these stories? ESPN did a series I mentioned right before the Super Bowl that was, in Vegas. So you got to talk about gambling. ESPN has a big, big partnership now through, I think, Penn Sports Entertainment to do what's called ESPN Bet. It's a big part of their operation now.
Yeah.
And this four-part series, which was technically branded Outside the Lines, really felt at times like a kind of softball, betting is cool now sort of series. And there was one segment of the four that was kind of critical and talked about gambling. But I would suggest you compare that to the piece that 60 Minutes did before the Super Bowl on the dangers of sports betting, and you will see just like a massive tone shift, a massive sense of there was just a lot of I don't know what you and I from video days would call like kind of like a kind of tentativeness, and then at a key moment of tension you suddenly have the gambling industry spokesman lobbyist on camera explaining why this is like a concern and they're going to fix it. It just felt kid gloves to me. And this is my takeaway of it, and this is what I worry about, who's going to break the news? Who's going to go outside the existing bounds and make sure that they're really closely monitoring all these things that we just don't know. We don't know.
I mean, CTE in NFL, I don't think anybody is arguing that we've figured that out yet or that we've solved it. And, would that have come from an NFL podcast by former players? Possibly. Maybe. But not.
Players also sometimes want to promote the idea that they hate that players right now, like in football, for example, like they're very annoyed by the independent neurologist who takes them off the game. So like these are players have competing agendas at times that like are fair mm-hmm. and we should understand. But like this is why you need an outside watchdog essentially watching a massive multi-billion dollar series of industries with an incredible amount of power. I think it's a very important thing, and we are in a moment of a real sparsity of that kind of journalism.
Yeah, I mean, and I know you got to dip in a sec, but it reminds me a lot of, we talked about this, but maybe the one thing I'll leave us with is, this is happening, I think, across everything in terms of journalism. And this isn't to say that, oh my gosh, you know, it sounds like, oh no, journalists are crying because they're losing your jobs. Go learn to code. Like, bro, chill. We're actually talking about something that could affect how we're able to understand the things that we really love, right? If I love football players, I don't want them to get hurt. A lot of the documentaries, what we call documentaries, you address this in your piece, they're essentially memoirs made by somebody who's still like 35, who's just paying a production, owns the production company, has editorial control over what somebody says about them. And it looks like somebody else made it, but actually it's them making it. And so if they did something untoward, if there's some betting stuff going on in the background, that'll never get dug up because nobody's investigating it. But as viewers, we at home are so used to the word documentary that we think, ah, this is an outside source who's been really unbiased and is, you know, making sure to go through everything and really fully understands this. And I'm getting a full picture of this person rather than just a really, really high production value Instagram post.
Yeah, I mean, that's the maybe less persuasive argument, which I think is true, is that like an independent reporter will ask more interesting questions and bring out something just in a character portrait, even if it's not a negative piece, even if it's just a story of someone, like you'll bring up stuff that you don't get otherwise. But the, you know, steroids were, everyone knew about it in baseball. Everyone did it. So like the players clearly all were aware of it and were making a choice not to, you know, not to share this, but it had negative effects for young players. You know, it had health problems for people. So I don't know. It's these are stories that like need, and we just don't know what we're not getting right now. We don't know.
And I think that's really the bottom line of this, is that, you know, I think there's an easy argument to be made here of, oh, well, like, what are you even worried about? Just like, I want to watch the people talking about the game that I love. I want to watch, you know, my favorite OG pitcher, my favorite OG punter talking about stuff that's great, rather than these dudes in suits. This is so much more interesting. And look, I agree. Bring more people in. I want to hear from the players. I want to hear from a coach. Like, let the Oregon player in the door. I want to hear from that person. That'd be fun too. Let everybody in. But also, if we're losing the people who were actually able to hold some of the players accountable, some of them do need to be held accountable, sometimes the league accountable, and sometimes the player is not necessarily equipped to be able to do that because they're seeing it from one view. Let's get all the perspective we possibly can. If we are losing one type of perspective, I think this is the argument you're making, we're losing a really important perspective that frankly makes the whole thing more interesting. But also, sometimes we do need to know about this stuff. We do need to know about this betting stuff. We do need to know about steroids. We do need to know about CTE. We do need to know about coaches abusing players that some players may not be comfortable talking about because maybe it implicates them. I don't know, right? So
we wouldn't know a lot about the life and, you know, the struggles of college players. You know, like a lot of stuff that's benefiting athletes right now in terms of NIL deals is the byproduct of journalism about that, you know. Mm-hmm. And like right now you have foreign countries buying stakes in teams, you know, like who's tracking that? So these are the issues are huge. They do have real ramifications. By the way, one of the teams that's happening, it's like the DC area, you know, no accident, right? Like, who's tracking this influence campaign, right? So these things matter. I do agree, like, journalism doesn't benefit from being boring and tedious and complaining about fun stuff that people want to watch. But
yeah,
it's a challenge. It's a challenge for journalism too, to figure out how to continue to be interesting while also doing the important work.
Yeah, man. Well, I want to let you get to it. So what's Thanks, next? What's next? Just, you gonna keep following this or what?
Yeah, you know, gonna keep talking about it. I'm doing a little more. Have a podcast coming out with Josh Fine, who's the producer for Real Sports, who's got some interesting ideas about how journalism can keep moving forward. He's focusing on kind of the nonprofit model, which, you know, like the Marshall Project model that really doesn't exist at all for sports. So he's suggesting maybe there needs to be something like that. He has some good ideas, but yeah, just gonna keep going.
Okay, man.
And I'm going to keep watching Foul Territory, by the way, because it's a fun show. So.
Yo, yeah, like I said, nobody's saying that stuff should go away. Keep more. Let's bring more of that. Let's just have more voices, all the kind of voices. I'm into it. All right, man. Thanks so much for coming through.
Thanks, buddy.
Peace.
See you.